You're listening to the Volleyball by Design podcast. Today, we got a special episode for you. We have the 2024 U Sports National Champion, Brock Daviduk, the head coach of the University of Alberta, on the podcast. And I got to say, he is a two-time national champion. We've had him on the podcast before, and he's a fan favorite. The insight that this guy has on the game, on what it takes to win, and clearly he's been successful at the highest level in this country, and I'm super excited. This is an episode where you're going to want to take some notes. We dive into culture, we dive into match preparation, we dive into off-season, we get a chance to go inside of what he's doing with his national championship team and why they're so successful. And you're going to see a lot of things that you can apply to your team. And I'm super excited to have this episode available to our listeners. So it's an episode you definitely don't want to miss. Stay tuned. Hi, I'm Coach Brian Singh, and after a number of years coaching competitive volleyball and as the head coach of the biggest college in Canada, I've become obsessed with helping coaches improve their knowledge and skills of the game by teaching them how to coach efficiently and effectively to ultimately reach their volleyball goals. I created the Volleyball by Design podcast to give you simple, actionable, step-by-step strategies so you can get clarity and apply what you learn right away. This is the Volleyball by Design podcast. What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 200 of the Volleyball by Design podcast. How's everyone doing out there today? We have, it's another week of volleyball. If you are a new listener, welcome to the podcast. My name is Coach Brian Singh, and I'm the host of the podcast. And if you are a regular listener, as always, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode where the goal, just like every week, is to deliver valuable, tangible, step-by-step strategies that you can apply to your gym and hopefully see results. And I got to tell you, for my 200th episode, this is going to be a treat. I'm very, very fortunate and blessed to have even made it to 200, to be honest. And I got to thank all of you out there who have been listening and trusting the process along the way, and you know, just supporting the pod and getting that making me rank, you know, one of the top volleyball podcasts in North America, and just the coaching listenership is amazing. And last week, before we get into this episode, last week, if you haven't got a chance, we had Mike Amaha on the podcast, U.S. national team setter. Take a listen to that episode. It was really cool hearing him break down, you know, some of the stuff he's doing out in Turkey, as well as some of the national team stuff. So really, really cool stuff there. But today's episode, super excited about today's episode. I got a national championship coach back on again, his third time on the pod. Sorry, that's my son in the background. Good night, Tristan. I guess he woke up. We have a three-time, well, he's back on the pod for the third time. One of our top listened to podcasts of all time. And he is a national, a 2024 national championship coach, Brock Daviduk of the University of Alberta. Brock, how's it going, man?
It's going well, man. Thanks for having me back, Brian. It's good to be here. Oh, always good to chat with you.
Man, I love it. And this is your second national championship.
As a head coach, yeah.
Yep. Nice. Second national championship in 2 years, I might add, which is pretty awesome.
3 years, yeah.
3 years? Oh, really? 20? Oh, okay.
Yeah, Trinity won last year. We won the year before. There's some confusion about the back-to-back. We're back-to-back conference champions.
Gotcha. That's right. Okay. Nevertheless, it's a privilege to have a national championship coach on the pod, a two-time national championship coach on the pod. So I think it's safe to say that you have some little expertise in the game of volleyball, and I can't wait to dive into this conversation with you. So before we get started, in case anyone doesn't know who you are, just give a brief little bio of, you know, who Brock Daviduk is and, you know, what you're all about.
Sure. Yeah, I'm from Edmonton, Alberta. I spent my post-secondary career at two places, Red Deer College and then University of Alberta. During that time, I got involved playing with the national team, moving up the ranks from junior to B to A team. And then after my post-secondary career, I went and played pro in France and Germany, and then came back and started doing my master's in coaching at U of A while I was assistant coach there. And then I moved up from assistant to associate coach, and then in 2018 became head coach, and been in that role since then, and had some ups and downs. You know, COVID came along and that was a really challenging year for us, but probably a critical year in the last 5 years of our program in terms of our culture and just for me. And feel like we came out of that with some awesome things that we've been doing in the last 3 years, actually, and had a lot of success in the last 3 years.
Nice. No, yeah, COVID was tough, man. I can only imagine, especially coming into like a head coaching role and then bang, first, you know, one of your first objectives, lockdown, here we go. So let's talk about this season then. We got a national championship under our belt here. I want to take us back to the summer, to the off season. You know, when you went into this off season after the previous one, what was your plans in the off season? How do you think about off season? You know, the floor is yours.
The number one thing is always to make sure our strength and conditioning game is tip top. We have a really good strength and conditioning coach. We have a legacy of really good strength and conditioning coaches. So, about 10 years ago, myself and Michael Cook tried to inject some culture into what we were doing in the weight room. And that had some big time growing pains. For people out there who don't know who Michael Cook is, he's the Team Canada strength coach for men's volleyball. He used to be with University of Alberta and started working with our team and was excellent, and then moved on from us to the national team. Right after that, we had another gentleman, awesome SC named Joel Jackson. He only worked with us for about 4 months because he got scooped up by the Edmonton Oilers. And then after that, Eric Goldberg, who's our strength and conditioning coach now, has been with us for, I think, 4 years. He's doing his PhD in ACL rehabilitation. And before that, he actually did a master's in coaching in motor learning theory. So it's been really cool to have these experts with us as we've grown that area of our program. And so that, like, is, you know, I pass a lot off to Eric, and I trust him. He does wonderful things with our guys and really understands the culture in the weight room. The big challenge though, Brian, is like everyone's, you know, we got guys that from in Canada, from Port Coquitlam, all the way out to the East Coast, and not to mention guys in Australia and New Zealand. Well, Billy, who's our New Zealand athlete, is now graduated, but trying to give those guys the autonomy to do their lifts and other activities while also trying to monitor and guide them. That's a big task. And Eric and I have worked on that in the last few years and things I did with guys before that to make sure we have a good grasp. Because it's really truly the only off-season time where guys can really get some strength gains. We also have guys that are with the national team. So Isaac Hesselinga, who was player of the year for us, he was with the national team a lot last summer. So those guys we just try to manage differently. And really they're in the hands of the national team. So I'm not much involved there now that I'm not with the national team. And those guys were just trying to make sure if there's anything they need from us that we're there to help them. But it's really, that's the first thing on the list is the strength and conditioning, and really the most important in the summer if guys aren't involved in like organized volleyball.
Right. So after strength and conditioning, are you guys on the court at all in the off season?
What we do is, I call it player driven. So if guys want to be on the court, then it's going to be up to them. I'm a big believer in mental breaks in volleyball. Cause when they're with us, our days are packed. Like if you're doing it right, it's a 12-hour day amongst volleyball, weights, video, small group, and school. There really isn't like a ton of time for other stuff. So I really want to make sure that guys, when it's break time, that they get their mental break. I think physically the culture right now where we're at is pretty professional. So they know how to do things physical within, you know, guys will take dips here and there, and we got to make sure we're helping them. But I'm a big believer in that, you know, mentally that we need freshness when it comes to the actual in season. So in the off season, I want it to be player driven. So I'm not really prescribing much. And there's a lot of guys that are really knocking on my door to get bookings and coaching, and I'm happy to help. But to be honest, Brian, and I won't coach those sessions in the evening in the summer because that time's family time for me, unless I'm with like a team, like a Team Canada or Team Alberta or whatever.
Right.
But I tell them if it's during the day, I can be there. But if it's in the night, that I'm not going to sacrifice that family time.
Wow.
But I tried to encourage guys to be playing. Terry Danilek, our general manager, former head coach, he's organized a league in the spring summer in Edmonton called V League. And it's only 6 weeks, but it is 6 weeks of pretty good volleyball. And it's guys that are looking to play that have the level, that have been playing either college, university, or maybe are fresh out of those, or in the off odd case, maybe a high school kid who's good enough. He actually does a draft, which is pretty fun. He throws it on social media and everything. And so that the V League has been coming more and more entertaining. If you go, it's actually pretty exciting. Last year, coaches were all wearing Hawaiian shirts, and there was a big party on the last day. And anyone who knows Terry Danilek knows that he knows how to organize a fun event. So it's fun. It also gets guys the opportunity to play some competitive volleyball and organized volleyball. I'm trying to help guys find a path on the beach if they're in between, say, there's a gap. I was just talking to Dan Lewis about this. Dan Lewis is with the national team program, about how there's a gap between junior national team programming and next gen programming in Canada. So I'm trying to get guys, trying to encourage guys to try out for beach if they're in between, or maybe if they're just not in the mix, because playing beach at a, we have some pretty good volleyball players. And if we go back a bit, Jordan Canham, before he had some really big looks with the national team, was with the next gen beach team on a year where he just didn't have the look from the national team he's been getting now. And I think depending on the athlete, being on the beach can be super beneficial. You know, if it's a setter, it's a little different, but you know, there's a lot of other players where it can be really beneficial if the level's high. So that's next. Can we, the guys that are making national teams, like Isaac Kesselinga and Jacob Sargent last year, and Billy Johnstone is playing Team New Zealand, and Enis Bisarovic will be trying out for Team Australia this year. Those guys, that's great. You know, we that's our number one hope, is that they're doing that. But if they're not, then can we be playing an organized level? And I think that's a gap that we're trying to close.
Gotcha. So let me, I just want to put a timeline for our listeners. So your season starts when and ends when?
So our season this last year started August 21st.
Okay.
That was preseason. And then, when was the national final this year? May 17th.
Yeah.
Sorry, March 17th.
March, yeah.
March 17th. That,
right.
Yeah. And I would say that most Canada West teams start either that same week, August 21st, or a week later, that kind of whatever date that falls on in any given year. And if you make it all the way, then it was March 17th.
And then from March 17th to August 21st, that's your off season, and that's when it's player driven.
Yeah.
Okay. Makes sense.
For court requested training.
For court. Sorry. For court training, the strength and conditioning, that's no matter
mandatory.
What. That's mandatory. I like that. Okay.
Yeah.
And do they ever get a break anytime in between that March to August, to like, we don't have to report to anything, no strength training, no nothing, or are they always on?
Again, with that principle of being, I don't want them mentally burning out. Like, guys will go on trips and stuff, and I'll be like, hey, try to stay on your program, and talk to Eric about having something on the road. But I also try to tell the guys, like, hey, if you need a break, like, have a break. Like, some guys go traveling, they're going to BC, or maybe they're traveling down south or Europe or something, and they want to just like have a mental break. I think I've built it into the guys that they know I encourage that. But I do try to explicitly state that.
Okay. Perfect. No, I love that.
That's my playing background. I knew the signs of burnout as a player once I was moving through my career. And so as a coach, like, that's trying to take that as a strength.
Gone
through those things.
Right. Yeah. No, I love it. Okay. So off season, strength and conditioning is your number one priority. And then the court time is player driven. And like you said, at that point in their careers, they know what they need to do. And the mental break, I agree, is significant. Okay. Well, let's fast track to August 21st then, preseason, when your players are now expected to be back in the gym. How do you go about planning your preseason, your training camp? And what goes into that?
Again, the very first thing is I put the benchmarks in the plan, like what our season is looking like, and then what preseason events we want to be involved in. And it that is also driven by factors like budget, number one. Number two, like what I think we need. Like we had more preseason last year than years before because I think we needed to play a lot. So put that in this scheduler and match that up with goals and principles. And then next would be I'll meet with our SC, which is Eric, and then we'll plan out the physical periodization of like what it's going to look like. We have two lanes we're running there of what it's going to look like physically in the weight room, or physically on the court, and then what it's going to look like corresponding to that on the weight room. And then, so goals of the season matched with the benchmarks, like the league preseason tournaments, and then the physical result of those benchmarks, and then seeing if we can create some purposeful peaks and valleys in the periodization cycle.
Got you. So let's talk benchmarks. Like what are your benchmarks?
Maybe I'm not using the right word. Benchmarks. It's the schedule.
Are you talking about your YTP? Like what it, like your, what happened, where it is on the YTP or?
Yes. But like the schedule, like we have, it's not public yet, but we have what our schedule is going to be next year in Canada West. So I put that in first and then I'm like, okay, this is when we're starting. This is who we have. Let's work back from there. What kind of preseason tournaments are available to us? What's available over Christmas? And then, because like last year, the way our season shook out, we were playing some of the top teams, not only in Canada West, but in the country early in the season. And that impacts how we're going to periodize leading up to that point.
That's right.
If we have a different scenario early in the season, then maybe we can do things differently with our physical load and our periodization. So I guess that's what I mean. It's more just putting the schedule in, Brian, and then evaluating what that schedule's like difficulty is. When I put the schedule in, I kind of plan out, this is a high match difficulty, this is medium match difficulty, this is low match difficulty. I then just got to be careful how I communicate that, because I don't say that to the athletes. That's more
100%
planning perspective. Yeah.
So when they come in on August 21st, do you have a like a set period of this is training camp and we're going to teach, we're going to train, and then slowly get into, okay, now we're going to start getting ready for our preseason matches? Is there like a set time for that?
Absolutely. Yeah. The first week we always do a camp with high school athletes. So it's an integrated camp where high school athletes get to train with our athletes, which is a popular camp. Pretty cool experience that guys get to do that. And you know, it's a lot of ball control. There's no real net interaction. So what I mean by that, we're not playing like front row middle against two middle or against a middle blocker and a left side because of the nature of the campers. So we'll play a lot of like back row threes and maybe a bit of corners action, but I think a lot of high school athletes need a ton of ball control and live gameplay and modified gameplay. And that's a great way for us to start too. Like when we put the vert units, the accelerometers on the guys, these are long sessions, but they're not jumping much. And they're like actual jump quality in terms of how high their averages are and compared to their standard average is quite a bit lower. So it's a good way to break them in. Right. And then after that, we still normally don't have a week of school yet. So that next week I'll ramp it up in terms of what we're doing on court, how much we're doing, or we'll go out on the beach. There's beach courts right by Saville, which are some of the best beach courts in Edmonton. So it's a nice way to continue to break the body in.
Right. And when it comes to like, you got your guys' time now, do you have a set? Like I know some coaches will be like, okay, the first 3 days it's all serving and passing and ball control, and then we transition to this, and then we transition to, well, I'm going to teach our systems. And do you have a certain strategy on how you do training camp?
Yes and no. It depends on the team. I like to be, I guess principally speaking, I like to be very technical early and get all the systems onboarded as fast as we can. So guys know like what our map is for what we're heading towards. So they understand, because guys ask it right away. Even if we're doing like, you know, a lot of times if you train serve receive, you're going to end up training it in a gameplay environment. So guys will start to asking you defensive system questions. So I've found that you just got to get the systems on them quickly. And, you know, if we're doing the same systems year over year with small tweaks here and there, they're going to know it anyway. So it's more just onboarding and reminding them of what they are. And then I'll pick areas if we're trying new things. Like last year at the start of the year, we were trying to run an exceptionally fast offense off of our libero when he was setting.
Okay.
Because he's a really good setter. That was our setter that we transitioned from libero to starting setter.
Okay.
So when he was first libero, we were just trying to run lasers to the outside.
Yeah.
A lot of pipe off him, middle off him. And so that was something that was new. So we had to take the time to rep that out. You know, that's
right.
Why. But I do like getting like, I like to call it economy of movement. It's always something I try to get really early, like in the technique of all the skills and trying to really get the guys, their movements refined and crisped at the start of preseason. I think that just basic movement patterns is so key to what we're doing that if I can get that on them early, it's really important before we get into more system type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And plus the motivation level is so high when they come in. So that's a good time to hit them with some of those more boring things.
That's a good point.
Because they're going to do it, you know?
That's a great point. Is there specific criteria you have how do I ask this question? Okay. So okay, I'll give you an example. Like Sparrow, for example, at UCLA, when guys come into his gym, the expectation is their weights, like their PRs are better than when they left the gym. Like that's an expectation that you come in. A couple other expectations he'll have is you need to be at, he has certain benchmarks. This is why I got confused with your benchmarks thing. He has certain benchmarks where it's like, okay, if you're a left side, you have to be able to do X, Y, and Z. If you're an opposite, you have to be able to hit the D ball consistently. Like he has his certain things that he expects from. Is there anything that you have for certain athletes that are coming in or like positions or any, you know, like in our gym, we need to do this. This switch at a high level.
Again, for me, it's there's a couple of maybe a couple of physical things in the weight room, but honestly, I'd pass that off to our SC to yes. Eric. I think, you know, if we're talking benchmarks, we will, in terms of spin serving, okay. We have like velocity benchmarks. Our rookies, we're trying to get them at 100 kilometers an hour. And when that guy hits that for the very first time, it's like, guys make a big deal of it in our gym. And then third years, we're trying to get them at 110 kilometers an hour. That's like one of the benchmarks we use. But then from there, like I would say that any given year, it's a little different. I think I look at the team and think this is what the makeup's going to be. You know, like last year, we were starting a season coming off of having a guy like Jordan Canham, who's just was such a monster for us on the right side.
Yeah,
and I knew that, okay, what he was doing on the court, that's not what our offense is going to be about this year. It's going to be different. And
that's right.
You know, Liam Esposito, he was one of the best players in the national final for us. And he started the season as our starting right side, but we went away from him. He was, you know, on the bench for a good chunk of the year. We had a different look to our offense. You know, we knew that it wasn't going to be a right side heavy offense. We knew a lot of volume was going to go through our left sides with Isaac Hesslinga and Jacob Sargent. So it's more of a kind of a diagnostic approach to what our personnel is going to be like that year.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was looking for is like, okay, so every year is obviously different. This was the year that you realized, well, your opposite's not there anymore. Our offense is going to predominantly run through our left sides, I think you said, and how we do that is going to be like, and this is what our identity is going to be or something like that. Like, so you have a vision based on, okay. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay. No, this is great. Okay, let's move on to one of my favorite ones, culture. So you said that we talked a little earlier, you mentioned strong weight room culture that you took some time to develop over the last four years or so. So let's talk about the culture of your team in general. What is the culture of your team? How do you instill it? How do the players embrace it? Go ahead.
Well, culture is bolstered by seven values. So we have an acronym that's on the board every day in practice. It started with the saying, give a crap. And crap is our acronym. It's now this year it was crapped. And it's spelled wrong. It's CCRAPPD. And those seven values are: one is care, two is compete, three is responsibility, four is accountability, five is professionalism, six is problem solving. And then we added the seventh one this year to be discipline. And those are a lot, but I try to, a lot of what we do, like, we point to that value. Like, this is what, especially early in the season, I'm trying to, I have it on the board and I'm circling the letter and saying, this is us being responsible, or this is us being competitive. This is problem solving opportunity. And I want to see that. Like, I don't want to just say that, put it on the wall one time and then it's over.
Right.
And that came about after a lot of just learning through my early phases of coaching, and then a lot of, like, just research during the pandemic. But that's something that's, like, pretty, I would say, central. We do, I think, a lot of things through the year to uphold and enhance our culture. And one of them is every summer we have a book study, where each year or class, so first year, second, third, all the way through fifth, they read a book. And that's prescribed by me. Other than fourth years get to choose a book that they have to agree upon. They read that book and they know that they're going to have to present on this book. So we have a team retreat that we started doing and reinvigorated. We used to do it a long time ago, and then through the pandemic, we weren't able to. And then the last couple of years, we've revitalized it. And we go out to a cabin not far from Edmonton and spend a weekend there and do kind of just hang out as a group, but also do some team activities that are guided by myself.
When do you guys do that?
As soon as we can.
At one point of the season, like August, like before August 21st?
So that August 21st week that we were talking about last week, It was the weekend, the Friday of that week.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, so it's not right before we come together. It's like, yeah, it was, and we want to do it as early as possible. And I would like to think of it as like a culture accelerator, sure. Especially like new guys come in, they get to see, we're spending time overnight and guys are really getting to know each other. Mm-hmm. And we used to just have the guys present on this book and it was good. Like, the guys gave good information, but I wanted to jazz it up a bit. So now we have we have a Jeopardy contest or like game where we put them in teams, and man, it is incredibly competitive.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Like, it's, it's pretty fun to watch. And so that team retreat is pretty important to our culture. I try to find themes every year. So I have, like a theme that I'll label for the team that year. This year it was Little Fires. I knew we were going to need, leadership from a number of people, not just like one or two big players on the team. Mm-hmm. So we tried to create a practice where we were encouraging that. And so I gave the guys a blowtorch and said, you're going to identify someone that had a little fire today. And I want it to be about leadership. And it could be, you know, you did this great, you were encouraging that guy, or maybe you had to challenge us because we were struggling today. And that guy will have the blowtorch above their locker for that day. And I think one of the things I identified is, like, I knew that we had a really strong captain in Graydon Weave, but he's a middle. So he was going to be off half the times. Like, can we encourage more leadership amongst the group? And so this was one of the strategies. The other one was after just a lot of reflection from last season and this like leadership little fire idea, we created kind of leadership silos in certain areas we thought were really important. So we had the team captains. We have four team captains this year. Then we had strength and conditioning captains. So there are three guys that were responsible for being leaders in the weight room. And then I would also, you know, work through them with important decisions like, hey, schedule this, or like, we're going to do that. Like, here you guys go and figure this out for us, or tell me what the team wants as representatives. Yeah. They would also be like, they would be responsible for making sure they contact me if someone's slacking or if things aren't going well in there. And then we had warm-up captains. So one of the things we identified this year that I wanted to upgrade was what we were doing in warm-up. And we discussed in the off season, is it going to be me, like, frankly, micromanaging our warm-up, which I really don't prefer to do. I will if I have to, and I can, but it's not really my style of coaching. Mm-hmm. And the other option was, should we create a leadership group that is specific to our warm-up? And that was well received, and it worked really well. We had three guys that were the warm-up leaders, and we gave one of them like final say. So if he said something, they all had to do it. And we talked about this early in the season, and they all agreed. And that was actually our team captain, Graydon Weeb. And having these areas of leadership, I think, worked really well. I'm probably going to add like a nutrition recovery silo next year, because there's just one guy I defaulted to when it came to nutrition as a representative of the team, and I felt that worked really well. And so I think, like, when it came time for our championship run and everything, I saw this just these layers of leadership on the team that were really helping us like operate at a very high professional level. And that's right. Like,
yeah,
that was what this year's version of Golden Bears culture I thought needed, one, two, was very capable of.
Yeah. Right. I love that. Crapped. That's so clever.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's great. You know, it's funny. I find that like a lot of coaches that I get a chance to interview and talk to, they all are saying similar things. Like, you have your seven values. You know, other coaches out down south, they'll have their, what do they call it? Their pillars. Like, there's six pillars or seven pillars, and it's so true. Like, without a pillar or a value guide, like, who are you really? Like, what's your identity? So I love that, and you stick to that, which is great. I love the idea of the book study, and the retreat is really cool. Is there anything else you can talk to on the retreat? Like, I know a lot of coaches love this idea of going away and doing something, but they're not sure what to do when they're away. Like, what to plan? Like, what activities can you do? Like,
yeah, talk about that. I think that's important. Like, just go, and if you're just like gonna fly by the seat of your pants, I don't think that's a great idea. Like, I think organizing activities. So, one, phones go in a bag or a boat. We had this big little boat thing that was on the island where we were. So the phones went there, and we made a game of it. Like, I forget how we did it. You had to have points, get points, and you could buy like maybe one phone call to your girlfriend over the weekend.
Oh, no
but way. Otherwise the phones stayed there and you couldn't get them until the end of the weekend. Okay. It's been going for years now. We do GBB Chopped. So we make teams of like an appetizer team, a meat team, a vegetable team, and then a dessert team. And so guys make dinner, and it's like I send them to the grocery store before the retreat, was a very good upgrade because before I used to do all the shopping, and man, was it ever a headache having to manage all these crazy recipes they're sending me. But this year they did all the shopping, and then they vote on who was the best in each one, and then they have a winner, and we try to scrounge up like some old Bears gear. And we have an assistant coach who's just so amazing. Like, his life is Golden Bears volleyball, and so he's been with us for almost 30 years, so he's got like 30 years of Golden Bears volleyball gear, so he's got to get rid of it. So often at this retreat he'll have a bag of like old school stuff that you'll plop on the ground, so guys are getting new old gear. We do something called Clive Livingston. So when we first started doing this, it's a who's who. So I asked the guys, like, send me something that no one else knows about you. And I think the first time we did this, this guy, his name's Lucas Dykstra, he sent me a message, and I just laughed out loud because he was like, I have 19 different like Facebook profiles because of gaming. I have no idea how gaming works on Facebook, and one of them is Clive Livingston. Right. And so we named the game after him since then. And I laugh my butt off every time this part of the season, because they're sending me hilarious stuff that no one knows about them. So, and then like organic things will happen. Like, we usually have like a bit of a Rubik's Cube competition, because we got some guys that shred the Rubik's Cube on our team.
Go back to that Clive Livingston. So everyone sends something that no one knows about them, and then what do you do with that?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I didn't say it. And then I put them in. Then I put them in pairs.
Okay.
And I printed off, so they'll be like, I'm trying to remember. Like, there was one of the guys used a couple times. Like, he was in a riot. A riot happened while he was in France.
Okay.
I drive really well in reverse. There's like all sorts of these things.
Sure.
I put all of those down without their name.
Yeah.
And then they go in pairs, and they have like a time limit, like 5 minutes or something. They got to guess who's who. With those Clive Livingstons, so with those descriptions, like, and then And what it does, so like, well, I think it was Isaac Haslinger who was in France. It was either Isaac or Merrick Edwards was in France, and a riot just happened. And so, like, man, like, go on, like, tell us about this riot. So we'll sit there, and each guy will talk about this, this thing about them, and some pretty interesting stuff. And it's a good way to get to know someone because it sparks a
Right.
conversation. You know, maybe it's
Right.
like, I think it was, there was one guy who's like, I play over 10 instruments, and it's like, whoa, who's that? Like, and it was great. And weave because it comes from a very music fan, musical family. And so you get
Right.
to know, I'm a big, big
Wow.
believer in, like, as many coaches are, and that you got to get to know each other as people, not just for success, but because having a good experience together. And that's a, it's a really good weekend for that. And honestly, a good weekend for me too, because I get to know these guys as people. And
Yeah.
that's like something I really enjoy about the job.
Okay, that I love all of these ideas. These are fantastic ideas. Okay. Wow, we spent like 20 minutes on culture alone. You know what? That's great.
That
That is
weekend's really big for us. Like the other thing we do is our players, they this was their idea. They wanted to have a player-led expectation meeting during that team retreat. And you know what? We it was really cool because they asked me right before Nationals, hey coach, can we have a player-led expectation meeting going into this week? So these things are coming full circle, and it's really cool to see that they're doing it autonomously, which is one of my goals to move them through a pathway during their time with us.
Right. Yeah, I know. I absolutely, yeah, it's so great. These are such great things to do, especially like as you're describing it, I'm just picturing it for like from a varsity team perspective, how much closer your team will be after this weekend than if you didn't have it at all. Like
For
it's like
sure.
night and
Yeah.
day. It's huge. And especially doing it at the beginning. Yeah, no, without a doubt, I couldn't agree more. Okay, so we talked about training camp a little bit. We talked about the retreat, which is great. Okay, let's move into We got another 15, 20 minutes here. Let's move into match prep. So now that you have your team, you've done your retreat, you have your culture established, you start your training camp, you go over all the foundational pieces, technical stuff. We're starting to ramp up now towards potentially getting into preseason play, exhibition. What are those conversations like? How are we planning for our matches?
I think like there's probably a lot in this area, Brian, that I could talk about. I'll touch on maybe two things, and you can ask me if you want to hear more.
Sure, sure.
One of my big goals this year, was to do less in terms of match planning, and that's more of a personal thing. Like I'm like I need to just do less, and I had a you know me and Ben Josephson are pretty good friends, and he's one of my coaching role models. And I remember talking about match planning with him, and he's like, I used to, you know, look under every stone when I first started match planning. And as I moved through my career, I just knew which stones to look under. And I really liked that idea
Imagine,
and
yeah.
just found that from the execution point, like I think there's a funnel when it comes to match planning. There's like all the information, this
Yep.
there's this much information.
Yeah.
Okay, and then I'm gonna find this much information. And then I'm going to choose this is the pertinent information.
Right.
And then I'm going to give this information to my athletes.
Right.
And then they're only going to execute from this much
The
information.
smallest point, yeah, which makes sense.
Because they'll miss some stuff, right?
Right, of course.
So that's part of it is like trying to get away from obsessing over things standpoint, but also part of it is like there's just some stuff that is like not gonna, it's not gonna be about all of these things. So I gotta pick the right things. And that's a bit of the art of match planning, especially in this day of like, holy moly, do you ever have a lot of information and
I
stats and
know.
data? And
Wow.
so our job as coaches is you gotta choose which ones. Like we have a really good stat team, that same guy that gives the gear on at our retreat. He's a wizard with stats, and the information he gives me is a lot of information. So I gotta pick what I'm giving to the team. Next, what I started doing about 7 years ago is I wanted we do team video on a Wednesday night, and I wanted guys to be very engaged. I didn't want them to be falling asleep during video and I'm just talking at them. I wanted to find a way to keep them engaged. So what I started doing is I would give them a sheet and like each position is going to look at these things and has to report on these things and these things. I don't want you to spend a lot of time on it, just about 20 to 25 minutes. And the reason, guys, is so you get them in your head. If the sheet is good or not, I don't really care all that much. That's what I said at the start. But I want it to be a way for you to get them in your mind so that when we show up on Wednesday, we know who Chris Byam is. What do we know about Chris Byam? Or we know who Mason Greaves is. What do we know about Mason Greaves? And now let's start, you know, that now that you've put those players in your eyes, you can start to see more during video. Rather, if it's all new, it's going to be a little overwhelming and might be a little exhausting. And I found that that worked quite well, but there was a really cool byproduct that happened where guys started presenting quite good information that maybe I didn't catch. And then I started integrating it into the game plan to the point now where there's so much that they're finding.
Right.
And what now is happening with, because we've had Graydon Weave and Billy Johnstone have gone through this process for 5 years. So now by their fifth year, their read and reports on setters is very, very good. So they'll give me a laundry list of things they're seeing. And I tell them, I was like, guys, this is great. Go with your reads. I'm not going to include everything in the match plan, but I'm going to focus on these couple things in the match plan, but things that you're seeing, I want you to utilize, even if I'm not putting in them in the match plan. And, you know, I think watching that process has been really rewarding. And so that's something that now I had fifth year middles, Billy Johnstone and Graydon Weave, and I'm trying to point our up and coming middles. You know, we have another pretty senior middle in Ennis Bisarevich, so his reports are really good too. But we had a rookie middle this year, Trent Cherwadi. I'm like, Trent, like, hey, what's your report looking like? And I'd be looking at his and trying to basically market like a teacher to encourage him to get to the level that Billy's at. Because Billy, my belief, and from what he showed in his stats and his blocking, was one of the best blockers in the country. And a big part of that is his ability to actually match plan himself. Because at the end of the day, he's the one that's going to be executing. So if I can encourage him to really take ownership over that, and some of the moves he made in the fifth set of the national final were because of his understanding of the opponent. Right.
I like that. You know how you talked about the funnel. I think that's a really good analogy. Is there anything that you find that comes across more than once in that funnel? Like, it's, we're always looking at like this specific stat or this specific area. It's always relative to whatever players we're playing against. Is there any commonalities amongst teams in that funnel?
Yeah, I think there's certain things that exist in the Canada West that are just, or in U sports, that are weaknesses people can exploit. And so I try to check those. There's certain things that, like, I think it's more, I don't know if I'm answering the question the right way, but I think this is more the which stones to look under.
Okay.
Like, there's certain stones, I'm like, I check them every time to see if it's one we can exploit. And maybe like they have trained it a little more and it's obvious, like a certain thing here or there. But there's certain things that, are common things to look at. And like certain teams, you know, have a certain style of play, or you know they focus on certain things. Like, I think Trinity Western does a really good job of being able to hit cross court after passing the ball. Where some teams, it's pretty obvious that they're only going to hit line after passing the ball. So, which is a pretty telling tendency at a lot of levels domestically. But I think a more advanced attacker is going to be able to not be limited in their angles after they pass the ball.
Right.
So that would be one example.
Right.
So like, we have systematic things. It's like, we know that if a guy is going to do this, he's going to do this. So I don't even put that in the match plan. I just remind them every once in a while. I was like, hey, this guy does, if this happens, we're going to do this. But what I will do is like, hey, this guy actually is able to do it. So let's, you know, that this guy can hit cross court after he passes to attack. So that's when I would actually include that, rather than like block line after pass to attack, which a lot of hitters just tend to do.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting. I was talking to Micah just last week, and he was saying that it's so tough at the pro level, because you can look at a team, play another team, but they're not going to play you the way they're playing that other team. So
yeah, and in Micah's position, so that's the like the interesting part of prepping for, like, you sit down, I imagine if Micah sits down, he's looking at middle blockers and the upcoming opponent. Now these middle blockers are doing something against the team they're playing, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to do it against Micah, right? But he's playing a way higher level of chess game than the setters are in the Canada West or in U Sports. But there are things that I think certain levels of middle blockers will show in video that you know they're doing it, but then the other ones, like, we'll have those conversations with setters So another part of our match plan is our we always have different positional planning stuff. And with setters, we talk about this concept. A lot of it is more just educating them. Like it's not just, hey, we're doing this. It's kind of trying to educate them on what tendencies are or what middles may do or do like that we can take advantage of or what middles are doing really well. And we'd be like, well, we come up with questions for our match plan and we want to see what the opponent team is going to, how that question will be answered in the match, because part of the, you make a great match plan, but there's humans on the other side. They're going to adapt. So That's we right. have to be able to adapt as well and have a match plan philosophy that's the case. Like when I make match plans, I tell the guys I'm a consultant, but they're decision makers because I want them to be able to make quick decisions and scrap the game plan if they need to, like when we're out there, which we had to do in our quarterfinal at Nationals. You know, Nicolas Fontaine was sick and Laval was an entirely different team than we thought we were going to see.
Right.
We scrapped the match plan, basically.
Right. Got it. I get that. Hey, really quickly, I want to go back to something you said here. Earlier in the interview, you talked about 12-hour days. What does a 12-hour day look like?
So the biggest thing is school. Like the classes. So our guys are, we're a really strong academic institution, and we have like last year, almost half our team was academic, all Canadians.
Wow.
So the big component is, and number one is school. The other scheduling factor is team practice. So team practice is 4 to 7 for us. We have a wicked facility in Saville. Like you've been there. We've got a lot of space there and we're able to just like claim that time, which is really nice. We don't have to be at the victim of like moving all around all the time.
Right.
And then, we'll have our lifts in the morning, our team lifts in the morning where we're really trying to make sure guys get there together. Cause it's another culture, touch point. But if they're not, school takes precedent. So guys will grade and weave. I go back to him. I don't know how this guy is such a machine. Like he was doing his master's in mechanical engineering this year.
Wow.
Did his undergrad in engineering 4 years, getting up at like early, early hours to do his lift before classes start at 8. Yeah. And then there's, you know, some guys will do individual training that they're asking for outside of our already prescribed individual training. And then we'll have video sessions and team video, like I just explained. Yeah. We have leadership training certain nights of the week. We have study hall. It's a lot, I think.
Right.
I think
how much study hall do you guys do?
It varies by year, but approximately twice a week for 2 hours.
Okay, that's good.
It does vary per year. Some years we have like we had a rookie this year that was just so academically inclined and quite mature. I was like, hey, let's get you on the court more. So don't worry too much about study hall. And now I think we have a culture that can manage that. These two guys were in study hall. This guy was training and there was no animosity about that. And that's
perfect.
We've worked to get to that space with our culture, but I think that's, you know, people talk about how important culture is, but there's reasons for it so that you can make decisions like that.
Right.
Where this guy's doing that maybe a little differently, or there's a lot of trust, buy-in, and understanding that you can benefit from in making like smaller decisions that help you progress every day in the execution of training. And that would be just an example of one.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. I got one or two more and then we're done. For club coaches that are listening to this and they're trying to prepare their players for the next level, for the university or college level, is there anything that you wish you could tell those club coaches? Here, you guys got to really train your athletes to do this so that when we get them at our level, it'd be much easier to transition them to our game. What are you seeing any lack, or rather forget, even if there is a lack of it, what should coaches be working with their athletes on to get them ready for that next level?
Oh man, that's a tough one. And I don't want to be presumptuous because I think coaching club, especially with some of the, like I see some of the really passionate club coaches around how much work they're putting into it. And I would hate to like come down from an ivory tower giving them my opinion. I also, Brian, you know, I never coached club. It's like one of the missing pieces in my volleyball background. So I don't have like a great ground to stand on to give that kind
That's
of
okay. Given what you know, when you have
these, given what I know, I would say I think it is really important to factor in strength and conditioning during the season. So, if possible, try not to sacrifice that for competitive games on the weekend. Now, you also need to be playing at, you know, on the competitive teams. It's really valuable to playing high level competitive volleyball. But if you can find ways to make sure you're integrating strength and conditioning, and I think there are a lot of club teams that are now starting to do that a lot more.
Yep.
But trying to draw attention to your athletes of the importance of the physical side of their game, because if they're post-secondary prospects, they're going to be stepping into a very challenging year. The level of volleyball and the length of volleyball.
Yeah.
Like we talk about August 21st to March 17th, high school athletes don't train that long. Ever. Their bodies aren't ready for it. So if we can equip them through strength and conditioning, then it's huge. The other one would be setters, get your thumbs back.
Okay.
Thumbs back. That's one I'm trying to preach with our academy, is thumbs back.
Love it. Anything technical that you see that they should, like, they're coming in that not being technically sound in certain areas, whether it's your team or across the board, is there anything that they could, you know, dial into? For me, it's just ball control. These guys have to continue to work on their ball control and their platform manipulation and just controlling the ball, so that they come into our gym and at least they have good ball control. Yes, they have to adjust to the speed of the game, the speed of the serves in terms of passing, all that stuff. But for us, it's the ball control. Anyways,
what about you? I think there's things technically at like really specific things. Like I was just saying, I was like serious about the thumbs back thing.
Thumbs back.
Just like how we're touching the ball. I think that, you know, as a player, when I went overseas to play Europe, I saw all these attackers with an elbow lower like this hitting really well.
Yeah.
And I was like, why don't we do that in Canada? And now guys like Nick Del Bianco are really popularizing this online. And I think that's another one, like coaches maybe take a look at if that can fit with your athletes. But I would really agree with what you said, Brian, in the age of highlights and the online, like just bounce world online, which is fun to watch. I'm a volleyball fan too. It's awesome watching Irvin Engipet just hammer a ball, but you know, ball control and serving is something that Canada as a country is still behind other countries. And I think, you know, just we're seeing other countries, I feel like we maybe don't grasp the gravity of it. Like being able to be good at not just ball control, but being all round. Like middles learn how to set, setters learn how to hit, like everyone learn how to spin serve. Like that would be what I would preach. So I think it's like kind of what you were saying with ball control, but also just know all the skills, be a volleyball player and serve.
Exactly.
If there's one thing, like I think, you know, I played club volleyball. My 17U year was back when they still had national qualifiers. So you had to qualify for nationals.
Right.
My next year was the first year they did the open. And so where the game has grown in terms of a participation level is crazy. Like the teams that were around in my 18U year compared to the teams that are around now, it's like the participation rate is so high.
Yeah.
But back when I played 18U, we were playing in like full gyms and guys were spin serving everywhere. Now, when you go to these like super nationals or like Savile or, you know, anywhere where club volleyball is happening, the serve run up space is small.
It's
so
small.
Athletes aren't training proper service run up in these mega centers, you know, which is great for participation and everything. But if you can figure out a way to coach jump spin serving, like it's an area that is just, you talking about what we got to correct first. That's like training an athlete how to serve with proper run up space.
Got it. No, I love that. In fact, I think Irving mentioned this. I was talking to Micah too. In France, they only play 3-on-3 volleyball until like 12 years old or 11 years old or something like that. They were saying there's no 6-on-6 until you're like 11 years old. Everything is 3-on-3.
Have you seen 11-year-olds try to play 6-on-6? That's
exactly
that's just it's serve, miss, serve, ace, serve,
exactly.
Miss, serve, ace. So
they go like, smaller courts and they go 3-on-3. Like that's all they do until like the age of 12. So even though Engipet is like an offensive monster, look at like, you know, like he's coming from a system where they're 3-on-3 until 12 years old. So I love it.
Well, yeah, I think one of the, if we're talking that kind of age where like I like the philosophy of like all the athletes want to spike when they're that young, if they can figure out a way to get up and hit the ball, like it's really encouraging. you know, and can we figure out a way to modify the game to have rallies?
Right.
And whether that's like, you know, 3v3, there's like the smash ball variations where you get a bounce, like adding a bounce so you can get a full rally rather than just serve ace, serve miss, serve ace, serve miss, or
that's right.
Like it, that's, it's so big for, I think, for developing the athlete or hey, just playing before 12, because that doesn't happen ton in Canada, right?
Man, so my daughter, when she was 3 years old, I was like, okay, I want to look to get her into something, right? So it's soccer, gymnastics, dance. That was it. There was nothing really else out. I'm like, when can we start volleyball, right? Hypothetically, 8 years old, 9 years old is when we started. And I'm not even talking, I just want her to get on a court and start looking like working on motor skills. So I don't know if I told you this, but so once a week since she was 3 years old, I rent a gym out for once a week and I do volleyball with her and her friends.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and now they're like, so we started them with balloons, and then we did beach balls, went to beach balls, and we're like just platform with the beach balls, hitting the beach ball. We play on a badminton court. So badminton net, badminton court. And now we've transitioned to, you know, the gator skin balls, like the foam balls.
Oh yeah.
Like the, you play some gym class, you play a dodgeball with them. Like the foam balls, really soft on the platform. So now these 5 year olds are like, I got to tell you, last week we had a rally, like a one over one back. It was like amazing.
That's great.
With the foam
good.
Balls with 5 year olds, bro. It was crazy. Good. And they're coming there like that. I was like, are you kidding me? Oh man. So that's I'm just like you, like that's the plan. You get them small groups. We shorten the court, badminton height, and just get balls going over and over. And then we put up the plyometric boxes so they can learn how to like hit over a net. They're so excited about that. Just to like have some fun with that. But
my earliest memory of volleyball was playing over a badminton net. Like that's such a great way to start. I'm going to steal your ideas because I got a 6 year old daughter that.
Oh, there you go.
Whether she plays volleyball or not is not really all that important to me, but I want her to be really physically literate and trying to get, you know, the overhead action, getting them to do stuff up here. That is such a complicated skill. So whether baseball or volleyball,
start with balloons.
Swimming, yeah, that's a good call.
So step and hit. Step and hit. That's what they're learning. Step and hit and like mechanical, like on the show. It's great. They love it with the blue. And then beach ball. Beach balls are great too.
Okay.
I like it. There's my little my little tip. I'm glad I can bring value to this conversation. Okay, we're gonna do a quick recap here, and you're gonna tell me if I miss anything, and then we are done. So we started off talking about the off season. Your off season focus is predominantly strength and training. You want to make sure that is top notch. So you have a significant weight room culture in your program, which I love. The off season is player driven in terms of court time. I like the emphasis on giving them the mental space because it is a draining season, especially when you're going all the way to the national championship. It takes a toll on their physical and mental health. So giving them that break where you get a chance to spend time with your family as well, and they get a chance to, you know, do them. And I like that it's player driven. The season is from August 21st to this year was March 17th. August 21st training camp starts, and that's where you look at your preseason, look at your budget, see what you can put it all on the calendar. A little backward design here, figure out all your dates. You might meet with your S&C to see what that looks like for both on court and weight room. The goals of the season, making sure that matches with the benchmarks that you have in place. I love the bringing in the high school kids the first week of camp to really bring in some high school athletes. I think that's such a great community builder, and it's also a great way of growing the sport and having them get a chance to see what high level ball looks like and just have fun with it. What a cool idea. I love that. Very, very technical early. I loved the economy of movement. That's great. You know, teaching all the technique of all the skills. I love that. You have some markers here. Your first year, you're trying to get them to serve at 100 kilometers an hour on that spin. And it's a really cool accomplishment when they do that. I love that everyone celebrates that. Third year, you're trying to get to 110. And then we transition to culture. CRAPT. That's a fantastic acronym. CRAPT. Care, compete, responsibility, accountability, professional, problem solving, and discipline. And those are your core values that you have in your locker room from day one. And I love that. I really like the book study. I've heard coaches talk about the book study quite a bit, but I like the way you do it over the summer, especially when it's time away, they get a chance to actually really read that book and take it in and embrace it. No, that's really cool. I like that. You prescribe it, of course. And then when you're in your last year, you get to choose, I believe. Then you do your team retreat. Every year is a different theme. You have the Little Fires theme, I think this was this year. And I love the cool things you're talking about. You guys do the GBV Chopped. You got a meat team, a veg team, and a dessert team. That's so cool. The Clive Livingston, send a coach, send them something about themselves that no one else knows, and then you play a game to figure out who does what. That was really cool. Some Rubik's Cube competition. The player-led meetings. I think those are huge. Yeah, the player-led expectation meetings. I love that. And I think you've advanced this year. We talked about, and two years ago, we talked about having your leadership group. We have leadership meetings and things like that. And this is the first time I'm hearing you talking about, well, you have strength training captains, you got warm-up leaders, you got team captains. What a great way of distributing responsibility and kind of making everyone feel like they have a role, like especially the leadership, like the guys that are getting into that third, fourth year, like they all have a, not just a role on the court, but a role, a leadership role on the team. I love that. Match prep. One of your goals is to do less, and talked about the funnel, which yeah, completely. I get you so much data out there in our world now. And really when it comes down to it, you're going to give them X amount of data and they're going to take one or two things away and have to go execute it. So at the end of the day, like what are those key bits? Team video on Wednesday night. Give them a sheet. They'll look at each like specific areas, 20 to 25 minutes prior to your Wednesday. They come and like you mentioned, by the time they're in fourth, fifth year, or even third, they're telling you stuff that you didn't even realize what was going on. And it becomes led by them, which I think is great. Yep. In terms of your 12-hour days, most of that is class time. You got a 4 to 7 hour practice window, team lifts in the morning, and then twice a week study hall. And by the way, study hall is so important. From a culture perspective, from an eligibility perspective too, to make sure they stay eligible and maintain their GPAs and things like that. That's so important. And then in terms of going to club teams or high school teams and coaches, what are we talking about when it comes to training our players? Just little things that you can do to help them get ready for the next level. Strength and conditioning, which I absolutely agree. When they get to our level, well, your level for that matter, it's a physical game. It's much more physical on the body. The opponents are much more physical. You gotta get there. Setter thumbs back. Every coach listening to this, setters thumbs back, okay? You're hearing that from a setter coach. So let's get our setters with those thumbs back. Lowering the elbow is interesting too, like playing around with that idea. I love that. And then, yeah, jump, you know, the jump spin. You're so right. When we play in all these tournaments, there's no serving space until you get to provincials. And even then, it's not a full, like sometimes you can, sometimes, but even sometimes it's not. And even then, you have to wait till you get the provincials before you get some of those serving spaces. Until you're like maybe 18U. 18U, I think they try to get the bigger gyms, but still. It is one thing. And I always say serving is the one skill that you have 100% control over. So you can practice that no matter who's around you. That is your, you got a court and you got a gym, you practice your serve. And that's our interview. Is there anything that you'd like to add to that?
That was really good, man. You're a good note taker. The one thing I'll say about the thumbs back, it's like, yes. I find that, setters I see in Canada, we just don't use the wrists enough. And a lot of it is the start position or thumbs forward. So then we've already exhausted the rotation of the wrist.
Right.
So if we can start here, like my hands do this, and there's a lot of action there where I can create touch and power. Like some of the best players in the world are doing it just with their hands, and it's from this kind of movement. And then, but at a lower level, if we cannot just rely on the pump with our elbows, but if we can use the hands and it's hands, so it starts thumbs back and then ends thumbs together, basically would be, I'd hate to give the wrong information, like wanting setters to set like this
right fair enough
the whole time, but start with the thumbs back and then end with the thumbs
and then
pointing each
end
other
the thumbs together. Yeah, no, I like that.
Yeah,
that's such a great cue. Yeah, and from the setter coach himself, so that's great advice. Well, listen, Brock, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today. I could tell you, I mean, based on, I've learned a ton here. I can only imagine what the coaches are going to pick up with this interview. So appreciate it, man. Wish you the best of a restful off season with your family. Get time to spend some time with your family now. How many kids Thanks. You got?
I got two. They're right here, man.
Oh, nice. Oh, you got two really young ones, huh?
Yeah, my daughter is 6 and my son is 1.5.
Oh, I'm 5 and 2.5. Turning 3.
Oh, nice. One. Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's
like,
such a
I get
great
it.
Age, hey?
I get it, man. When you have it off, that's like with my wife too. When I'm not in season, she's like, buddy, when I like this year, I think I was gone 6 weekends in a row It was
Oh man.
ridiculous. Yeah, this was it's never been like, in 7 years of coaching college, it's never been like that. This is the first time. And so that when it's off season, it's off season. And I delegate a lot to my assistant coaches who don't have families.
Right.
I'm like, you guys, this is your time to shine. If you need me, like, you know where to
Yeah.
find me. So I can appreciate that, man. Absolutely. Okay. We're
Great.
good to go. Thanks so much, man. And for my listeners, you might want to go back and listen to this again. Take some notes. This was a good one. And I will see you guys next week on another episode of the Volleyball by Design podcast. Take care.
All right, cue the music. Look, are you at the stage you want to be in your volleyball journey? How would it feel to get clarity on your training? And instead of taking months to get better, you could improve in weeks, if not days. When I was a young coach and player, I felt this way all the time. The truth is, after I got some great advice on how to be efficient, my learning curve grew exponentially. Let me show you how to be more efficient and effective in this game. I invite you to check out CoachBTraining.com for more resources that you can use to take your game to the next level. I look forward to helping you reach your volleyball goals.